This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here with Benjamin Netanyahu, who's going to be speaking at the United Nations in a matter of moments. We were watching hundreds of delegates from different countries just walk out. Others are standing up and applauding. So they want to make a big stand-up. They want to make a big scene that we're not going to listen to the prime minister. All they've done is absolutely taking their security into their own hands. Despite objections from President Biden, they took out Hezbollah. Now you have Lebanon close to controlling their country for the first time in decades. In Syria, you have a country that is willing to get into the Abraham Accords, no longer a welcome place for Russia and Iran. And then you have Hamas on death's door. They won't give up, so therefore the IDF won't stop. And of course, Iran, with their nuclear program, has been destroyed. That's where these countries are leaving. They don't like what's going on. They also don't like Israel in the region to begin with, let alone a muscular one. So a lot of these delegations have walked out. Basically, half the place has emptied out. Nice speech. So we're going to be following that at the UN, but that's not all. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I think what we see in front of us, the challenges are finish Hamas in Gaza, keep their foot on Hezbollah. They've conducted over 1,000 attacks. They will not let them build capabilities in southern Lebanon again. That's never going to happen.
That is General Jack Keane, fresh off a trip to Israel, talking about what's going on. The prime minister takes center stage. Why it's important than ever that we help the IDF finish off Hamas despite the allied defection.
Number two.
Radical left rhetoric. The radical left is causing the problem. They're out of control. They're saying things. And they're really dumb people.
Got to stop this. The political attacks on ICE and certain Democrats are ones helping inflame the rhetoric as more deadly encounters take place. Not with the legal criminals, that's tough enough, but with organized protesters. And in Dallas, a flat-out killer.
Number one.
I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter.
So you mean you leaked James Comey, former FBI director. He has been indicted, first time in American history, by a grand jury on two charges. Why, I think even if he doesn't get convicted, it's a win for justice. He's going to be forced to qualify and define his behavior. And while he goes front and center, he's got a problem. For years, he's contradicted himself. He's gone out on book tours, been asked to testify. And it's amazing how little he remembers and how little he knows for a guy that prided himself on his detail. And you don't become FBI director if you forget everything. Griff Jenkins joins us now, Fox & Friends Weekend co-host, reporter, all around on all the major issues of the day. Griff, your response to the massive walkout as the prime minister took center stage.
You know, Brian, as we've been watching the walkout of these delegations, it reminds me of when, gosh, more than 10, 15 years ago, when Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad came to the UN and delivered a blistering attack on not just the U.S., but the West, and delegations walked out because here you have Iran's president just blasting the West in a preposterous speech. In this case, all these delegations have walked out of Netanyahu, who is speaking specifically to the hostages in Gaza so they can hear his voice, that we've not given up on you, that Hamas is a brutal, savage organization that has killed millions over the years and, of course, taken these hostages and torturing them. And so it's such a contrast of actual messages. You would think that more delegations would stay in there because this speech that Netanyahu's delivering is among the most important, I think, of our current time.
Yeah, but they want to make a symbol. They're not going to listen. They don't want to listen. October 7th didn't mean anything to them. It means everything to Israel. They cannot allow this to happen. As Netanyahu is pointing out now, the Houthi rebels did attack a hotel yesterday. So they were able to, with long-range missiles, it's not perfect. Their defensive missile system, whether it's David Sling, or whether it's the Arrow system or the Iron Dome, it can't catch everything, as we know. I want you to hear what Ambassador Huckabee said to Piers Morgan about the allies of ours, France, England, Australia, Portugal, and others, now recognizing a Palestinian state. Good luck with that. Cut 29.
We're disappointed as a United States in our allies, people that we are great friends with, because, first of all, it's a violation of the Oslo Accords. That's problematic. But more importantly, it has had the opposite effect of what I think they wanted to see happen. The first thing that happened, as Secretary Rubio has repeatedly pointed out, it just ended negotiations with Hamas. That froze absolutely stone cold. The second thing, we've been desperately trying to work some resolve to the impasse between a financial crisis between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. There are some issues that are very harmful to the Palestinian Authority. Quite frankly, it's not good for anyone. Remittance money should go back to the PA. But there's some unresolved issues. We were making progress, and I've been going back and forth between Ramallah and Jerusalem trying to work on it. When this happened, that ended the discussion, and we're back to zero on that. And the third thing that happened is that it has emboldened Israel to start talking about declaring sovereignty over parts of Judea and Samaria. So all of those things, I don't think, were the intended consequences of the decision by countries like France and the UK to unilaterally declare a Palestinian state, but that's the result of it.
Griff, your thoughts.
Well, look, I'm glad to see that the Trump administration is not going to go in on this. And there really isn't, as Ambassador Huckabee's pointing out, much justification in this current time to recognize that. And it's such a political transparent sort of signal. It's almost like virtue signaling, but it's worse for the very reasons that Huckabee laid out there in terms of whether or not you are able to expand on the Abraham Accords and try and change things in the Middle East. That's what President Trump really gets the most credit for, was going in the first Trump administration, the Abraham Accords. But when he came back, he spent the 4 years off thinking, how can I really make a difference? How can I really change this? And yet some of our closest allies from the UK, France, and others are now recognizing doing this, like, you know.
But isn't the UN supposed to be a place to have communication? So if you don't like somebody, I'm going to walk out. What are you, a child? I think we listened to Iran. I'm pretty sure we don't agree with Iran. If the Russian president was going to speak or a delegate, we stay. I'm sure Mike Waltz still sits in there. So has some courage. They pick up and they walk out. So they're going to show you that they aren't even listening. That's what makes it very hard to deal with anybody in the Middle East.
It's a great point you make, by the way. Don't forget, President Trump just spoke there, and he just unleashed at Turtle Bay on pointing out that body, the United Nations, has begun to lose such credibility that why do we have them? They are a place of diplomacy, and you're not seeing that today.
Yeah, we'll bring back some of the speech throughout the hour, but I want to switch over to another area of your expertise, and that's what's happening with immigration and ICE. You know, there's law enforcement. They're called Border Patrol. They're called ATF. They're called your local cops. You're called your state police. Kind of accept them, right? Border, you know, you also have National Guard in times of emergency. Understood. But there's something about ICE where people aren't putting these things together. They are national federal law enforcement agents. They have a specific job, what to do. They live amongst us. They're one of us. They are American. But somehow it's okay to vilify them. Listen to how they've been described. Cut 37.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the street.
Running around our communities like masked bank robbers, terrorizing women.
When I talked about what terrorism looks like, this is it.
When I see ICE, I see slave patrols.
This is not Germany. That's the SS and the Gestapo. This is the United States of America. Unmask yourselves.
Masked men jumping out of unmarked cars, people disappearing, no due process.
The SS, the Gestapo.
You were just with them, right? You were just with them. Operation Midway.
I was just with Marcos Charles, who was the individual at the Dallas, at the press conference, at the Dallas shooting, that horrific shooting. And, you know, I was riding in his car, and we were making arrest of illegal criminal aliens.
Why are they wearing masks?
Well, they're wearing masks because they're being doxxed, because there are real-time apps that are putting exact time and location images and information out there so that someone who may be,
yes,
like not mentally all there, that hears the constant message from Democrats that the ICE agents are equivalent of Nazis, feel emboldened to take action, and you have things like what happened in Dallas.
Like unmarked cars. Of course unmarked cars. You ever hear of an unmarked car with a police officer? If you're going to do a raid on a house, would you want a siren? No, of course not. You got to have the element of surprise. These guys are dangerous. 70% are convicted, are criminals, let alone the amount that we don't subscribe to. What's the international criminal system that we go to?
Interpol.
Interpol. So Venezuela and Cuba are reporting their criminals? Absolutely not. So these people are dangerous, and we have to do the best we can to make sure our men and women survive. So they're going to be in unmarked cars. Now they're corrupt. Now they're part of a mob.
Well, and, you know, to be clear, every operation I have seen or even witnessed in person, every agent has ICE or HSI or Border Patrol on their body, identifying themselves in the community. And you're right, the people. So I was out in Operation Midway Blitz. The first guy we took down, they had been studying where he lived. They knew when he was likely to leave the house, and he had been convicted in the U.S. last year of forcibly sexual assault on a child under 13. And so when you consider the fact that ultimately these ICE agents, who are men and women who are also husbands and wives and brothers and sisters, they're real people just simply carrying out federal immigration law enforcement. But yet the Democrats, who, if they don't like it, should change their laws, work to change laws in Washington, they're choosing to dehumanize these federal immigration law enforcement officers to a level now that I got to tell you, Brian, I've never been so concerned for ICE and federal immigration law enforcement, because the stuff that they're telling me,
they can't be surprised.
Is frightening.
But you can't be surprised, because I just played you what they've been hearing from people that they like Tim Walz and Brandon Johnson, a remarkably ineffective mayor. The Congressman John Larson was the crazy guy going, "This is not Germany." The references to Hitler. So anybody who follows them says, okay, yeah, these my lawmaker, my state representative, thinks they're crazy. I have to take it upon myself to go kill them. Chris Rufo points out, this is not right or left. This is all left. Cut 38.
We're seeing the emergence of a new form of left-wing terror. Back in the last wave of left-wing terror in the 1970s, it was people organized into cells and groups like the Weather Underground, the Black Panther Party. What we're seeing now is a two-part terror system where the left's messaging apparatus, whether it's through the mainstream media or through niche internet forums pushing hard left-wing ideologies, trans ideology, Antifa ideology, the message machine is radicalizing what we could think of as radical normie terrorists, people who are lone wolves in everyday communities that have been radicalized online, and they go out without any institutional support, and they're killing conservatives.
Yeah, can we play the soundbite, by the way, Brian, of the Democrat leader that stood up recently and said, "I condemn political violence of any kind, and I will be the first to admit that my party went too far with anti-ICE rhetoric. I believe it's putting things in danger. Let's, as a party, come together to say we disagree with Trump's immigration policies, but we will not put men and women in law enforcement in danger." But cut?
Yeah, they don't have it.
Oh, it didn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not been said, and it's not been said at all. In fact, I haven't seen any let up. I'm very curious, after Dallas, when they say this, I'm out to kill ICE, and it's the ICE app that tracks ICE agents and their operations that allowed him to line that ICE agency up. Now, look, that's a facility, and I guess everybody in the Dallas area knows that's where ICE is. But they're able to track agents out in the field. And this sniper, in his final remarks online, let it be known, this is what we're doing. How long are we going to be allowing this? Can you just take it down? Final thought on this?
Final thought. That final message is important that you point out, Brian, because he said he hopes that what he was about to carry out would put fear in agents' hearts and minds, that they could be targeted. And at the end of the day, I think the fact that you have the acting ICE director, Todd Lyons, and others like Jonathan Fahey on Fox and Friends with us this morning saying, unfortunately, if Democrats don't work to change this environment, that rhetoric, it's going to get worse. And that's really terrifying.
Griff, who's going to be on this weekend?
We got Todd Lyons on. That's going to be great. We got Dave Portnoy. That's going to be good stuff. We got Laura Trump and a whole lot of fun stuff. Who knows?
We've got 8 hours to fill. Griff Jenkins, brand new. Congratulations again. Brand new host of Fox and Friends Weekend, just filling in for Lawrence today. At the bottom of the hour, Halil Noor, the executive director of UN Watch. We're going to talk about that organization and changes that have to take place. Griff, thanks again.
Thanks, Brian. I love being here. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to do something I've never done before. I want to speak from this forum directly to those hostages through loudspeakers. I've surrounded Gaza with massive loudspeakers connected to this microphone in the hope that our dear hostages will hear my message. Our brave heroes, this is Prime Minister Netanyahu speaking to you live from the United Nations. We have not forgotten you, not even for a second. The people of Israel are with you. We will not falter and we will not rest until we bring all of you home. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks to special efforts by Israeli intelligence, my words are now also being carried. They're streamed live to the cell phones of Gazans. So to the remaining Hamas leaders and to the jailers of our hostages, I now say, lay down your arms. Let my people go. Free the hostages, all of them, the whole 48. Free the hostages now.
So that's Ambassador Huckabee on Fox and Friends just told us they were going to do that. So speakers have been set up. Streams have been pushed forward in Gaza, what's left. And we'll see how many people saw it. And even if one hostage heard it, it's worth it. As we watched a massive walkout on the prime minister as he took to the podium to speak. Isn't that great? So you don't agree with the fact that they're going to attack and the way they're doing it in Gaza, the way they bombed the Houthi rebels after they attacked and tried to kill innocent people in a hotel room. You're upset that, I don't know, Iran's nuclear program isn't intact. You're upset that Hezbollah had some pagers blow up and they're no longer that terror group, the gold standard of terror groups around the world. Every single step they were criticized for, and every single time they made the world safer, not just for them, but for us, for civilized people. If you're a terrorist, it's probably not good that Netanyahu is in charge. So in the end, he's going to finish off Hamas. He's going to do it with working with us. I think President Trump is putting some guardrails on. He does want to get those hostages out. He was made an offer directly from Hamas to the president, our president, saying, I'll give you half if you give me 60 days to get to some type of an agreement, and the president kind of ignored it. So we'll see where that goes. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening. And the prime minister is going to meet to go to the White House and meet with the president again. Pretty good, considering the prime minister wasn't even contacted by Joe Biden, considering that he was ignored and sent out the back entrance of the White House by Barack Obama. And that is why, and you'll hear it in a moment from General Jack Keane, who was just in Israel. He said the most popular figure in Israel right now is Donald Trump. Brian Kilmeade Show. What's wrong with the UN? We'll find out next from Halil Noor, who works it every single day.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I've never seen such pro-American attitude among the population in Israel. It's always been solid, but it's really over the top as a result of the United States supporting Israel unequivocally with weapons and also with that decisive attack. And the praise for President Trump is everywhere you go once they recognize that we're Americans.
And there's a pro-Trump area. I think they even named streets after him over in Israel. And they have a good relationship, President Netanyahu and President Trump and Prime Minister, I should say. And they're going to be meeting a little bit later today in the White House. But right now, the Prime Minister is speaking. But what everyone's going to run on the other channels is the big walkout happened as soon as he took to the podium. I imagine all 50 plus Arab nations and maybe France, maybe the other countries that are about to recognize the Palestinians will do that. It's pretty amazing it's got to this point. Khalil Noor joins us now, Executive Director of UN Watch, a group that analyzes what the UN's doing right and wrong. Khalil, how's this week been for the UN?
Well, this is their week where it's a catwalk for dictators, right? And we saw that. You have dictators from some of the worst regimes show up under the giant UN logo, pretending to speak in the name of international law, human rights, and they're some of the worst dictators. And they are purporting to lecture America, to lecture Israel, especially pointing the finger at Western countries about human rights. So there's a lot of hypocrisy. That's mostly what we saw this week.
So I was talking to Ambassador Mike Waltz. He said, do you know there's a whole commission analyzing George Floyd and the George Floyd riots and his impact on America? They're analyzing our society, and they have seven different committees on seven different climate change promotions. That seems to be the mandate.
Yeah.
Let's work on climate change.
Yeah, sadly, I have to say the George Floyd thing that was at the time endorsed by the Biden administration, which was very unfortunate. You know, the UN, the thing that unites them often is attacking the West and attacking America. It's a lot of anti-capitalism. Climate change is not an innocent concern for climate at the UN. It's a way to target capitalism in America. And let's not be mistaken about the ideology. The fact that they celebrated a 16-year-old child at the time, Greta, who's now basically a Hamas propaganda nutcase on sailboats sailing to Gaza. This was the UN's hero for climate. So there's a lot of really visceral anti-Western ideology masked in the name of climate.
So Donald Trump was extremely critical. We'll pull some sound of that. Donald Trump being critical of the UN. You let him have it on Monday. What are you guys doing? Why am I negotiating peace agreements? You didn't even contact me to maybe background or support or do follow-up. He goes, you know, why am I handling all this stuff? Why don't you assert yourself? He didn't bring up the fact that UNRWA was involved in the October 7th attacks on Israel and they're providing aid in Gaza for Hamas.
Look, we just published a 200-page report with 598 footnotes, which shows in detail how the heads of UNRWA on the ground of the schools in Gaza and Lebanon were not just supporters of Hamas, but Hamas terror chiefs. Suhail al-Hindi, head of 13,000 UNRWA staff in Gaza, is a key member of the Hamas Politburo in Lebanon. His name was Fathi Sharif, head of 2,000 UNRWA teachers, was the head of the Hamas terrorist organization in Lebanon. UNRWA knew it. We were paying their salaries. American taxpayers were paying their salaries. It's disgraceful. Mike Waltz said at his confirmation hearing, he's going to work to get UNRWA dismantled. Mm-hmm. And if we care about hope for the Middle East, an agency that's indoctrinating Palestinian children into hatred should be shut down.
So now that the Palestinian state's been recognized by 180 countries, including France, Germany, Australia, Portugal.
Not Germany. But France, the UK, Australia, Canada, Germany, not Italy. But yeah, but most of the world's countries.
So what changes now in the UN? Do they get more of a seat, more power internationally? It gets more complicated if Israel does something that might be in violation of international law from country to country.
Yeah, look, the truth is they keep playing this card. 10 years ago, they voted to call them a state at the UN. So their nameplate has been State of Palestine since, I think, 2012. The International Criminal Court recognized the State of Palestine just to enable them to do lawfare against Israel. So that was already done. On the ground, it's actually limited what they can use with this, you know, keep playing the same card. But I would say, you know, the opposite. We should ask questions. If France and the UK and Canada and Australia say that there's a Palestinian state, then why are there Palestinian refugees in Palestine? Why in Jenin, for example, are there Palestinian refugee camps? If Palestine is a state, there are no more refugees. They're living in Palestine. You should end UNRWA, for example.
Right. So this is Netanyahu. Here's a little of the speech going on. It's still being conducted now. It's been going on for, I think, 30 minutes. Listen.
You know what message the leaders who recognize the Palestinian state this week sent to the Palestinians? It's a very clear message. Murdering Jews pays off. Well, I have a message for these leaders. When the most savage terrorists on earth are effusively praising your decision. You didn't do something right. You did something wrong, horribly wrong. Your disgraceful decision will encourage terrorism against Jews and against innocent people everywhere. It will be a mark of shame on all of you.
So it's you are rewarding this behavior. You got you don't like the way the president, where the Israel's doing operations in Gaza. They look at it as operation for survival. With Hamas still intact, it's just a matter of time before we get another attack. Your thoughts about how this speech is going over?
Well, it's a very powerful speech. You know, certainly performatively at the UN, the Islamic States did a walkout before. But it's a very powerful speech. Prime Minister Netanyahu is mentioning key facts. And he talked about the curse of Iran. The Iranian regime is arming, sponsoring terror proxies throughout the region. They have destroyed societies from Yemen to Lebanon to Gaza. And it's been miraculous and extraordinary what the Israel Defense Forces were able to do. They crippled Hezbollah with the pagers, which was a miraculous operation. They crushed most of Hamas's military capacity, but it's not finished. Iran, together with the help of President Trump, they devastated their nuclear and ballistic missile program. Assad regime, one of the most horrific regimes in the 21st century, killed 500,000 people, is gone. That is extraordinary. Prime Minister Netanyahu, I think, helped frame what's truly going on in the Middle East. And instead of making this issue about people in Gaza being the victims, let's remember that Iran armed Hamas to start the war on October 7th, and largely their unit of terror proxies, their system of terror proxies, has been decimated.
And they say, well, we didn't know about it. It's hard to believe they didn't know
about
it.
It may be they didn't know some details. That's possible. But certainly they were arming them for this.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I want you to hear some of the criticism that Donald Trump leveled on Tuesday, and I want to get your reaction to it.
I didn't think of it at the time because I was too busy working to save millions of lives. That is the saving and stopping of these wars. But later I realized that the United Nations wasn't there for us. They weren't there. I thought of it really after the fact, not during these negotiations, which were not easy. That being the case, what is the purpose of the United Nations? The UN has such tremendous potential. I've always said it. It has such tremendous, tremendous potential, but it's not even coming close to living up to that potential. For the most part, at least for now, all they seem to do is write a really strongly worded letter and then never follow that letter up. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve war. The only thing that solves war and wars is action.
Is he right?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say it's even worse. It's at best, it's empty words coming from the UN. At worst, it's words that legitimize the world's worst regimes. Let's remember the UN. You know, we just published the data today of the past 10 years of the UN General Assembly, which is meeting now in New York. And in 10 years, there have been zero resolutions adopted by the UN on China, 1.5 billion people oppressed completely. Zero resolutions.
The Uyghurs.
1 million Muslim Uyghurs in camps. Hong Kong democracy extinguished, thousands of Tibetan temples destroyed, human rights lawyers thrown into prison. Someone lifts up a white piece of paper in Shanghai, a young woman, throw her into prison. Zero resolutions. Cuba, police state, teenagers in prison because they called for democracy. Zero resolutions. Venezuela, a corrupt narco-criminal regime. Zero resolutions. 173 on Israel. Okay, so that's – and these resolutions legitimize Hamas terrorists. So it's at best empty words, but in reality, often it's words that are legitimizing attacks on Israel, America, and the West.
Right. So does it – is it fixable? Is the UN fixable?
It's fixable if we fix our own societies. You know, it starts with reform is very hard to do institutionally, very hard to change institutions. But at a minimum, get our democracies to do the right thing. Nothing stops – Britain, France, Canada from introducing a resolution on 1.5 billion people suffering in China or migrant workers being enslaved in Qatar. No one ever even tries. Their mentality is to go along to get along. Look, in October 8th, so we're talking in barely 2 weeks, in about 10 days, the UN's so-called Human Rights Council is going to elect the Iranian regime's official, a longtime Iranian diplomat, to their Human Rights Council as an expert.
What a joke.
And no one's saying anything. We're the first ones to expose it. We're urging Western diplomats to try to stop it. So far, they're saying nothing.
Here's more from Netanyahu's speech. Again, he's still talking.
But regrettably, many leaders who are represented in this hall, they send a very different message.
Sure, in the days immediately following October 7th, many of them supported Israel. But that support quickly evaporated when Israel did what any self-respecting nation would do in the wake of such a savage attack. We fought back. Now just imagine, just sit back for a second and imagine, an attack against America proportioned to the attack against Israel on October 7th. Imagine a regime, a terror regime, dispatching thousands of terrorists to invade the United States. They massacre 40,000 Americans. They take 10,000 Americans hostage. What do you think America would do? You think America would leave that regime standing? You don't think that. No way, not a chance. The United States would wipe out that terror regime and ensure that such savagery would never threaten America again. This is precisely what Israel is doing in Gaza. We're wiping out the terror regime of Hamas and ensuring that this savagery will never threaten Israel again. That's what we are doing. That's what any self-respecting government would do.
And they're not hearing it because they left the building. Maybe they'll never understand it. And whenever you think about what's going on in Gaza, they're dropping flyers. They're directing people through text messages to get out of buildings. And it's the Hamas that goes into hospitals. It's Hamas that makes headquarters in schools and mosques. And that opens themselves up to a target. And they got to be very discerning to the Israelis. But they also have to make sure we're not dealing with this for the next generation. They want to finish it off for good.
Look, Prime Minister Netanyahu quoted one of the experts at West Point, Colonel John Spetzer, who is
considered, we've had him on a lot.
Yeah, considered one of the world's experts on urban warfare.
Teaches war college.
Exactly. And he knows better than others that urban warfare is extremely difficult, especially as you indicated. Hamas built hundreds of miles of terror tunnels under all of Gaza. All of Gaza is built over, they dug under and built terror tunnels under homes, hospitals, and schools. That cement that we gave them with our tax money that was supposed to build homes, hospitals, and schools, they used them to build miles and miles of terror tunnels. And Israel has to destroy Hamas, or October 7th is going to happen again. Hamas is threatening. It's a nihilistic death cult. As Prime Minister Netanyahu said, Israel suffered the equivalent of 10 times 9/11, and it's a regime that's not thousands of miles away in Afghanistan or Iraq. It's literally, you know, meters away, okay? It's 100 yards away from Israel.
So, Khalil, you look forward to working with Ambassador Waltz on time, maybe making even incremental changes?
Absolutely. Look, at a minimum, we have to hold the UN to account, and America has power, has leverage. He's just been confirmed. He has a certain influence at the UN. He needs to use it. I'm looking forward to working with him to hold abusers to account and make sure that U.S. taxpayers and other countries' taxpayers get some, you know, value for the dollar, and we're not wasting it on legitimizing anti-Western narratives that are propaganda for terrorists.
Yeah, I think it would be a huge resource for him because you got to get him up to speed quick, and he's a quick learner, as you know. Khalil Noor, Executive Director of the UN Watch, appreciate it. Back in a moment. We'll continue to track this speech and bring back more highlights. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Wait a minute, Mr. Prime Minister, they tell me. Wait a minute. We believe in a two-state solution where the Jewish state of Israel will live side by side in peace with the Palestinian state. There's only one problem with that. The Palestinians, they don't believe in this solution. They never have. They don't want a state next to Israel. They want a Palestinian state instead of Israel. And that's why every time they were offered a Palestinian state but were required to end the conflict with Israel and recognize a Jewish state, every time, over the decades, they turned it down. And that is why every time they were given territory, they used it to attack us.
So that is the Prime Minister who points out a very salient point to France, to Portugal, to UK. We know you're just kissing up to your Arab population. We know you can't possibly believe that the Palestinians would have a state without Hamas in charge. And the Palestinian Authority is corrupt, more corrupt than any other group in the world today. These are billionaires who take aid money and make themselves rich while their people starve. They don't want a two-state solution. They don't want to say, just leave us in the West Bank and give me part of Jerusalem and give me Gaza. That was offered to them. I was on the air when they pulled out Israelis from Gaza. They had no interest in leaving. They were there for generations. But they were told Gaza, according to the previous prime minister, Gaza, Ariel Sharon, was going to the Palestinians. No negotiation. Just give it to them. And they did. And they made it a terror haven. Terror haven. That's why they put up the barriers. People say, well, it was a human outdoor prison. It was not. And now that you've gotten in there and you saw that it looked like it, it looks terrible now, you understand what was going on. And if people were looking at the barrier that was there and thought, why are you creating that barrier between the two peoples? You saw what happened on October 7th. They breached the barrier and killed innocent people in the most horrific way possible. Here's more.
This rejection of a Jewish state not only applies to Hamas, it also applies to the so-called moderate Palestinian Authority. You should know that the Palestinian Authority pays terrorists to slay Jews. The more Jews the terrorists slay, the more the Palestinian Authority pays. The Palestinian Authority names its government buildings, its public squares, its schools, after the mass murderers of Jews, which they glorify as martyrs. They pay and glorify not just the killer of Jews, but also killers of Christians. Christians like Taylor Force, an American veteran who was brutally murdered in Israel by Palestinian terrorists.
Is there anything, is anybody challenging any of that? Yeah, you're right. I mean, when I saw the head of Hamas celebrating with his wife, there's a party? No. Because their kids were killed in battle. They thought, what an honor to have our kids killed in battle. And they were celebrating, like, look how lucky I am. I mean, that's the mentality that you're fighting. They don't like this life. They're waiting for the next one. Well, I have news for you. Most of the people I know kind of like this life and not waiting for the next one. And if they are going to get to the next one, they want to be on our own account, not by some terrorist who thinks they're going to be martyred if they kill you. And that's what Israel deals with on a daily basis. If they listen to everyone, Hezbollah would still be intact. Syria would still have Assad. They still have a thriving nuclear program in Iran. Now we know if they do try to rebuild, it'll be blown up almost immediately. And that's just the way it is. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, I'll be in Richmond tomorrow. I hope everyone can join me at Richmond, Virginia, at Carpenter Theater. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, and Laughs. Also streamed on Fox Nation. Don't move.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. When you visit the doctor, you probably hand over your insurance, your ID, and contact details. It's just one of the many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose it, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm so glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade Show coming to you from Midtown Manhattan, where just across town, President Prime Minister Netanyahu just wrapped up, I think it's about a 45-minute speech at the United Nations, where all the Arab nations seemingly walked out. A lot of other nations did, too, to send a message. I don't want to listen. I don't know. Congratulations. You go to the United Nations to speak and to speak your mind, but you can't hear it. If you can't hear it, how are you going to know what you think of it? But good luck with the symbolism. This hour, we're going to be joined by Josh Krashauer, and he is standing by. And there's a lot of other things going on, too. The President of the United States is heading to the Ryder Cup in Bethpage, Long Island. He knows players on both teams, and you know what? It's pretty universal. The golfers seem to just love him. Bottom of the hour, Trey Gowdy on the Comey indictment. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I think what we see in front of us, the challenges are finish Hamas in Gaza, keep their foot on Hezbollah. They've conducted over 1,000 attacks. They will not let them build capabilities in southern Lebanon again. That's never going to happen.
There you go. Jack Keane, fresh off a visit to Israel. Their prime minister took center stage. Why it's more important than ever that we help IDF finish off Hamas.
Number two.
Radical left rhetoric. The radical left is causing the problem. They're out of control. They're saying things. And they're really dumb people.
They're dumb, and they don't care, it seems, about safety. Got to stop the political attacks on ICE. And certain Dems are ones who have been flaming the rhetoric as more deadly encounters take place, not with illegal immigrants. That's tough enough. But with organized protesters, and it looks like this White House want to unwind who's behind it.
Number one.
I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter.
His explanations are so crazy. It's led to his indictment. James Comey, the first FBI director ever to be indicted by a grand jury, and he's indicted on two charges. Why I even think if he doesn't get convicted, it's still a win for justice. And we'll begin with Josh Kroshauer. Josh, not a big surprise that Comey's indicted. It's a one-page indictment. It's very simple, very direct. The experts say it's going to be hard to prove. I'll talk to Trey about that. What's the ripple effect in Washington?
Oh, I think it's going to have massive political implications, and I think this may actually even overshadow the other big story in Washington about the possibility and perhaps likelihood of a government shutdown at the end of the month. Look, Trump can often be his own worst enemy, and the charges in the indictment, as I understand them, are, and I listened to all the legal experts like Jonathan Turley on Fox News to kind of offer some expertise on this, but it stems from his testimony back in 2020 to Senator Ted Cruz about leaks that were inconsistent with his testimony and what his deputy McCabe had said, and that's what the indictment, you know, the claim that he was not being truthful under oath is at the heart of one of the charges. It does seem like there's a lot of reasons to criticize Comey. Lord knows he does not have many friends, Democrats, Republicans alike, for his sanctimonious style, for his behind-the-scenes machinations with Russiagate. But as far as the charges presented, everyone I've talked to have suggested there's not a whole lot of there. And I think the big question I have is that the very respected conservative head of the Virginia Circuit Court in Siebert resigned because he didn't think the charges were there. And there was a lot of political pressure that Trump, as himself, telegraphed. So, look, we saw this with Kimmel. Like, you know, a lot. Trump almost became his worst enemy because he said he wanted to, you know, get Kimmel fired. I don't think the president should be involved in those issues. I think that's generally overreach. And the fact that Trump tweeted out or put a Truth Social out in the aftermath of the Comey indictment, kind of expressing the same glee about this situation, I think is also could hurt the case. So I listened to Jonathan Turley and a lot of the legal experts for the legal analysis, but politically, this has really, people are kind of in their corners politically, but I think this has raised some questions about the pursuit of power in the executive branch.
Josh, he doesn't have many friends in the Democratic side either, you know, so it's very interesting. Kimmel is loved by every liberal because he does nothing against Republicans. By the way, we're watching the President of the United States. We'll bring back these comments about the board Marine One with Kai, his granddaughter, fantastic golfer, going to play golf in college, already committed. They're flying out to Bethpage, and he's going to follow around Bryson DeChambeau, which is going to be fascinating. So that's just a side note. I just want to keep you up to date on what's happening. But on this note, the one thing that I think is going to be interesting, you and I follow this, and most people in this building follow this. There's a lot of people that just unplugged from what happened, that you had a group of people, and I'm not saying you agree with this, but I'm going to tell you what I know. A group of people who, when Trump won, went out of their way to try to destroy his presidency. And they put this thing together in order to make it look like some Russia collusion. And along the way, the FBI director was right in the middle of it. But when asked about all of it, the Steele dossier, or Hillary Clinton behind the Steele dossier, when asked about if Donald Trump was colluded and what kind of proof he had. He doesn't know anything. I'll give you an example. And also the leaking to the press of information about sensitive things to do with the case. If he's leaking to the press, that's part of the indictment, which FBI shouldn't be doing. Listen to a little of this. For example, with Brett Baer, when he's on his book tour, Cut 7.
Did you ever try to find out?
Who leaked an unclassified public document? No.
Did you inform the president-elect at the time what you knew about how it was funded or who was behind it?
No, I did not.
Did you inform him that Christopher Steele had been fired by the FBI?
No.
Or that he had lied?
No, and I didn't know those things at that time anyway.
Cut 6, Ted Cruz.
On May 3rd, 2017, in this committee, Chairman Grassley asked you point blank, quote, "Have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?" You responded under oath, quote, "Never." He then asked you, quote, "Have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton administration?" You responded again under oath, "No." Now, as you know, Mr. McCabe, who works for you, has publicly and repeatedly stated that he leaked information to the Wall Street Journal and that you were directly aware of it and that you directly authorized it. What Mr. McCabe is saying and what you testified to this committee cannot both be true. One or the other is false. Who's telling the truth?
I can only speak to my testimony. I stand by what the testimony you summarized that I gave in May of 2017.
So your testimony is you've never authorized anyone to leak. And Mr. McCabe, if he says contrary, is not telling the truth. Is that correct?
Again, I'm not going to characterize Andy's testimony, but mine is the same today.
See, he's clearly lying. Not many people indict themselves and say, "I was wrong. I did this. I made a mistake, Andy McCabe." And by the way, who knew about it? James Comey knew about it. So you're saying James Comey, Andy McCabe made up a story where he's guilty? I mean, that would be the first in the history of spy novels.
So James Comey has a long record of being very slippery, of being an operator behind the scenes, leaking to the press, saying one thing and doing things behind the scenes to advance his interests. You could also listen, when you listen to that exchange, Brian, very lawyerly language. Like he didn't actually get to the answer of the question. He kind of, you know, "My belief is, you know, I'm not aware of it." That's why I think the legal case is a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
And why there was a real hesitation within DOJ to prosecute, because James Comey is very slippery. He is an operator, a beltway operator who knows how to play these games. And look, a lot of people who come before Congress who testify under oath use those same games. I mean, that's sort of the nature of this town. So, you know, it's very unusual, and I could hear that line, that slippery language, and Ted Cruz really had him to rights, but you could hear that very bureaucratic language, lawyerly language. And I think it's politically problematic. It doesn't speak well of his character in that situation. But at the same time, like, to prosecute, to send someone to jail for that is pretty unprecedented. And I think that's a distinction.
I have literally 3 pages of sound, and I don't want to do the whole segment on this, Josh. So I want the prime minister, and you write for the Jewish Insider. So the prime minister of Israel just took to the podium, and dozens of countries walked out. It was a huge number. I mean, some of them have big delegations. He walked out, and his speech is basically, "This is what we've done because of October 7th. And this is what we've done since. And we're not stopping." What do you think, what kind of impact does the prime minister have on this delegation? How much pressure is he under to end the Gaza City operation and end this thing once and for all?
Well, look, he was not in a friendly venue because the UN is a hotbed of anti-Israel sentiment. In fact,
always has been.
Many of the delegates walked out, and that generated its own kind of scene in the hallways. Look, a lot of the themes that the prime minister talked about were things I've heard before. You know, he's given a lot of this, you know, spent a lot of time focusing on the same issues before that very body. I mean, he did focus about the successes that Israel had in defeating enemies, not just of Israel, but of Western civilization, the terrorist groups like Hamas, Assad's regime in Syria, Hezbollah, Iranian, the strikes. He credited Trump very effusively for helping out, taking out the, you know, helping degrade the Iranian nuclear program. I think the big question is what you allude to, Brian. What is the next step? How do you define victory? What is the next step? How do you rebuild Gaza after Hamas is defeated? And that you didn't hear a whole lot of details. That's sort of the big question hanging out there. I know Trump you know, he's been a stalwart supporter of the prime minister, a stalwart supporter of Israel. But, you know, I'm sure Steve Witkoff and the president have had conversations about what is the goals? When is the war going to end? What is it going to take to defeat Hamas? And then what is the next day going to look like? And those are the tougher questions for Israel to deal with. And Netanyahu is in a little more of a trickier political pickle when it comes to dealing with those issues.
So, Josh, I'm going to bring you to ICE. I personally believe you can't pick and choose law enforcement agencies that you like. You like ATF? Oh, you do. Okay, fine. You like the cops? You like the local cops? You like the state cops? Do you like the Border Patrol? What do you think? Do you like the FBI? Well, no, tell me. Either you're for law enforcement, knowing that they don't walk on water, they're human beings, or you're not. So they decide that ICE is our bunch of villains, horrible people who go through the military academy, get elite training, and try to take illegal immigrants off the streets, the worst first. Listen to some of this rhetoric. Cut 37.
Donald Trump's modern-day Gestapo is scooping folks up off the street.
Running around our communities like masked bank robbers, terrorizing women.
When I talked about what terrorism looks like, this is it.
When I see ICE, I see slave patrols.
So you get it. You get it. And now we have a shooter on top of a building. Just randomly trying to kill as many ICE agents as possible. You see what's happening in Chicago. You see the problems they've had in California doing their job. And these Democrats, and I've got to say it, if there were Republicans doing it on somebody, I would tell you. But these are Democrats who feel as though this is a political winner and don't seem to care that they're inciting violence. How do you wrap your head around this? Or do you think I'm overstating it?
No, I think there's legitimate criticisms you can make of certain individuals or certain cases. But the whole attack on ICE, it goes way back. I mean, it goes long before the most recent episodes. You know, really goes back to the first months of the Trump administration, where the notion of immigration and enforcement itself was somehow deemed illegitimate by the far left. And there's a whole radical kind of panoply of slogans. And you hear at these protests and these radical groups, and anti-ICE is sort of the top of the list for what these people who adopt a whole lot of radical positions really embrace. So, look, it's not a coincidence that you see, you know, not clearly the shooter in Dallas embraced this ideology. He, you know, this shooting was planned apparently months in advance. So this guy wasn't just, you know, mentally. He really had been searching and had a deep-seated worldview, and that was clear in his intention. So, you know, this is the kind of, I think it was Tim Walz who has been saying all kinds of outlandish things in recent months. That is not the kind of rhetoric that wins Democrats the middle America back. That's not the kind of rhetoric that's going to help them win the White House back in 2028. And look, when you criticize individual cases, fine. I mean, that's legitimate. But when you're actually, you know, condemning an entire agency, many of whom are doing their jobs very, very well and living by kind of their patriotic duty, that is something that turns off a whole lot of Americans, and it's not politically wise.
Right, even though, you know, the scooping up of illegal immigrants in our country, not as popular as sealing the border. Sealing the border is outrageously popular. But the other thing, you know, you go in and you 7 out of every 10 are criminals. Now, there's a lot, like Venezuela and Cuba don't report to the to the Interpol. So we don't even know what they are. So we're going to get them out by intelligence and operations and not cooperating. But it seems like Gavin Newsom, they're not pulling back even after Dallas. I think it's extremely dangerous.
And part of the challenge, I mean, just as far as immigration policy goes, is the Biden administration essentially opened the border. I mean, for several years in the Biden administration, they basically allowed anyone to come in without any real enforcement at all until they realized this was really massively unpopular. So you do have a sizable number of people in this country here illegally recently, not for years, but within the last couple of years that are here illegally. And look, I think the Trump administration has a legal duty to deport people who are here illegally. It gets a little more politically problematic when people, you know, are married, have kids, have families, have been here for many years. Mm-hmm. I think that's a dicier political situation and moral situation. But the problem was really invited by the Biden administration when they just opened the doors and legalized people who did not wait in line, did not do things legally. And it's created a massive problem that needs to be fixed.
It did. And, you know, it's more maddening. They denied it in real time. They don't know what you're talking about. It's impossible. It's migration. That migration, we have climate change is forcing people to leave their homes. Josh Krasshour, thanks so much. There's at least five main stories every single day in this Trump era. It's amazing, Josh. Thanks so much. All right, we'll bring you the latest from the United Nations, the latest from the president's trip over to the Ryder Cup in Bethpage, Long Island, and take your calls next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's looking like we have a deal on Gaza. And we'll let you know. I think it's a deal that will get the hostages back. It's going to be a deal that will end the war. It's going to be a deal which it's going to be peace. I think we have a deal. That'll be number eight, Peter, not there.
And you talked to Peter Ducey and said that. And welcome back, everybody. The President of the United States just leaving en route to the Ryder Cup on Long Island, New York. And he gave a bunch of answers to whatever they threw out at him with Kai, his granddaughter, over his left shoulder. And he said, we might have a deal on Gaza. Now, we've heard that before, but Trump doesn't just throw that out. It could fall apart. But Witkoff was scrambling yesterday. And I do know that earlier over the weekend, I was contacted that the Hamas was trying to go directly to President Trump. I don't know if that went through, if this is part of that. But and I agree with Mark Levin, who's as connected to both leaders as anybody in the country, in the world. And he said, three things have to happen. Israel security's got to be paramount. Number two, Hamas has got to go, and all the hostages got to get out. That's it. I mean, they are so beat up and destroyed right now that they have trouble even communicating with each other. And I worry about the health of the hostages, let alone what they're trying to do, but what they might do by mistake with the hostages. So, listen, we'll have it all. Trey Gowdy's going to break down the Comey indictment, and we're going to find out what he thinks legally and who's the James Comey he knows, who he questioned many, many times. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's a pretty easy case because, look, he lied. You saw my truth today. He lied. It was yes, no. He didn't say, well, in my opinion, he didn't do a lot of things that maybe he should have, but I don't think he could because he lied. That was a very important question that he was asked, and he wanted to be specific, but he didn't. The only thing that happened to him, he didn't think he'd get caught.
And that is the President of the United States with the chopper in the background en route to his golf tournament, which I know my next guest would love to attend, the Ryder Cup, with his Kai over his left shoulder, the president answering all questions. First off, what we told you, he has indicated that there might be a deal for the hostages. My fingers are crossed, and we all hope that indeed happens as long as Hamas no longer is in power. But number two, he's talking about James Comey's indictment. So in case you do not know, federal prosecutors in Virginia have charged Comey with obstruction of justice and making false statements, according to a person familiar with the development who was granted anonymity to discuss the sensitive matter. Evidently, they won him for three charges. They got two. Comey has answered back. What about the chances of this case being successful, and should he be indicted at all? Trey Gowdy did a lot of the questioning with James Comey and was scratching his head through a lot of it. The former chairman of the House Oversight Committee in government, but most importantly now host of Sunday Night in America with Trey Gowdy, Sundays at 9 o'clock. Trey, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good. First off, I know you want to be talking golf, or at least be watching. But number two, just on the Comey indictment, I know Andy McCarthy, a guy we really like, doesn't think that he should have been indicted. Do you?
Yes, I do. I have great respect for Andy. If the charge were whether or not Jim Comey has lied, period, you would have no trouble whatsoever getting a jury of 12, regardless of jurisdiction, to convict him. But indictments don't work that way. They're very particular. I actually had a conversation last night with the senator who asked the questions on the count that was what we call no build. In other words, the grand jury did not vote to go forward on that one. You can guess who that is, the senior senator from South Carolina. I find it you know, the criminal justice system, I think, frustrates a lot of people, even those of us that were in it. Of all the things that Jim Comey did, all the things, and I just wrote out a long list of things, because you're right, I had to deal with him a lot until he got fired. The fact that he is being prosecuted for lying about whether or not he leaked or authorized a leak, I think Andy's point, I guess, and Andy doesn't need me to speak for him, I would not want my case to rise and fall on the credibility of Andy McCabe. So you do have a conflict. McCabe says something did not happen or did happen. Comey says it did not. I would not want to go into court with Andy McCabe as my star witness because he's just as disingenuous as Jim Comey. But as a member of the public, which is what I am now, there has to be accountability. And Comey did more damage to the FBI than any criminal defendant could ever think about doing throughout his or her career.
It's true. And what you're referring to, the fact is Andy McCabe said, yeah, I did leak to the press. And they said, did James Comey know about it? He goes, yes. And they said, well, and Comey came back and said, I didn't leak to the press, and I don't really know what Andy McCarthy's, what Andy's talking about. So I want to bring this exchange front and center. It's James Comey and Susan Collins. Cut one.
Did you show copies of your memos to anyone outside of the Department of Justice?
Yes.
And to whom did you show copies?
I asked, President tweeted on Friday after I got fired that I better hope there's not tapes. I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night because it didn't dawn on me originally that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
What the hell is he talking about? Like, why? What do you mean? I have to get these tapes out to somebody else. So you're leaking out classified documents to exonerate yourself because the president's going to have a tape. I listened to this 3 or 4 times. What is he saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what he's saying. He used a law professor friend of his to get, because we had a hard time getting those memos, but we got to read them all. So go back in time. Jim Comey is meeting with the man that kept him, even though he should not have, Donald Trump, as the FBI director, memorializing all of these conversations as soon as he gets back in his car. So he now it's so ironic to look back on it. Now, Brian, he did everything in his power to keep Donald Trump from becoming president.
Yep.
I don't think anybody would disagree with that. From Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, FISA, everything he could. Trump decides to keep him anyway. And his, you know, reward, his gratitude to Trump is that he goes and memorializes every conversation that he had with him in a memo. And he wanted, look, the Bureau is notorious for leaking. I mean, that's true even in local cases. Gosh, it's true on national cases. And they usually go to the New York Times. I even know which reporter they usually go to. I mean, I won't name him. I guess it's not his fault that that's who they pick. But I know who they go to. And so what he was trying to do was color public opinion even back then. This is after Trump had won. So try to keep him from winning. Even after he won, this whole intelligence community assessment with Brennan, I mean, that's the thing that really makes my hair stand up even more than it normally does, is there was a real missed opportunity to go after Brennan. I mean, Brennan just bold-faced lied in the middle of a House Intel Committee
about
meeting
what?
About whether or not they relied on the dossier, but the time passed. So there's so many lies to choose from Comey. But you just played Susan Collins. You got Ted Cruz asking about the leak. You got Lindsey Graham asking about a memo he got from John Ratcliffe. You know, the Biden DOJ, that's when the window was after Biden took office, because you only get 5 years to bring this. So the lie that Brennan told me was in 2018. So that window's closed to hold him accountable for that. And I think that's what people are so frustrated about. Is number one, why do we have a statute of limitations? Number two, is this really the best you – all the things Jim Comey did, this is the best you can come up with is whether or not he or Andy McCabe is telling the truth.
Right. And the thing is, you didn't know what you know now. You didn't know that Brennan's on the record saying, you know, the dossier, he was challenged. I'll just paraphrase. Said, you know, this is, you know, we can't verify this. He goes, yes, but doesn't it sound true? Really? You're the CIA director. Doesn't it sound true? Are you listening to music? Or are you trying to get to the facts? Here's a little of the exchange with Brett Baer, because this guy kept going on book tours after he escaped prosecution, and he thought he was in the free, you know, free and clear. Cut eight.
So the story of that briefing leaks out almost immediately after you do it. CNN and others run the story of this unverified dossier. Did you or your subordinates leak that?
No.
Did James Clapper?
No, not to my knowledge. No.
John Brennan?
I don't know who leaked it. I had no part in any leaking of it. It was about 4 or 5 days later that it leaked. But I remember because President-elect called me about it.
Did you ever try to find out?
Who leaked an unclassified public document? No.
Did you inform the president-elect at the time what you knew about how it was funded or who was behind it?
No, I did not.
Did you inform him that Christopher Steele had been fired by the FBI?
No.
Or that he had lied?
No, and I didn't know those things at that time anyway.
Come on. You don't
not
know
true.
These things?
Not true. Not true. Most of what he said in that interview with Brett was not true. We were able to figure out who. So there's a guy named James Baker, who was general counsel for the FBI and a Comey acolyte. I mean, in the fall of 2016, both before and after the election, the Bureau was actively leaking to left-leaning media outlets trying to either influence the election or do exactly what they did, which is cast a cloud over Donald Trump's presidency. And the shame of it all, Brian, is they did. They were successful yep. with a really big assist from the media at casting a cloud. And you know Donald Trump pretty well. You know him better than I do, but I know him well enough to know this is not just about politics with him. These were some really awful personal allegations oh, yeah. that you're going to get asked about by your wife and your children. So imagine having your child, I don't care who you are, Donald Trump or Donald Jones, having your children ask you, is this stuff true about a Moscow hotel? And anyone who knows Donald Trump, he doesn't want you talking while he's eating. He certainly is not going to do – he doesn't know what a golden shower is. We had to tell him. He doesn't have a clue what that is. The guy's a germ freak. You think he's going to let somebody do that to him? I mean, I don't want to gross your listeners out, but that's a pretty gross thing to do. But that's what Christopher Steele – came up with, and now what we know, paid for by the Clinton campaign, laundered through a law firm, relying on unreliable sources. And if Jim Comey did not know that his bureau had fired Christopher Steele as an informant, then what was he doing? We all knew that he'd been fired because he didn't follow FBI protocol. And then that's when they did the end run and tried to get the information to Bruce Orr via his wife and Fusion GPS. And that's what makes people want to set their hair on fire is Durham took forever to come up with nothing. So here we are left.
But did uncover some things, right? He did uncover some things. I thought that
he uncovered some things, but it didn't result in any consequences.
True.
And he lost
True.
Most of his trials.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost more trials in like a month than I lost in my career.
So a couple of things, Trey, and you're going to kill me for saying this because I didn't go to law school. If you can expose this information and see him say, I don't know, I don't recall, I don't know, I don't recall, and a jury says, oh, not guilty, at least the world or the country will be forced to pay attention. And the half that just listens to Jimmy Kimmel and Rachel Maddow will go, who don't like Comey anyway, because of what they think he did to Hillary Clinton, will go, what the hell? At one point, they're going to go, a reasonable person go, what the hell was going on with this guy? There's no way any of this is true. And how dare you go to this length to undermine the presidency and deny it? The problem is no one ever met someone like Donald Trump, who was never going to quit. He was never going to stop. He was going to buck all tradition, comment on a case while it's happening, almost fire Robert Mueller in the middle of an investigation, and then ultimately get exonerated because he didn't do anything. So that's why I think they won by doing this, because it's going to force him to lawyer up. I want him uncomfortable. Number two, he's going to be forced to testify or not testify. People are going to have to talk about this case again. And I want them to understand, whatever you think of Trump and that upset election that you didn't think was possible, he legitimately won, and he was legitimately undermined for 2.5 years. And guess what? Our country was hurt. That's what bothers me the most.
Irreparably hurt. And the reputation of certain entities that we rely upon, the DOJ. I mean, I'm sitting here reading these articles this morning that Jim Comey's some kind of martyr. Democrats wanted to string him up at what, 6-7 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
The only reason they changed their minds is because he went after. But little did we know, while he was inserting himself in the Hillary Clinton campaign, he was doing that times 100 with Donald Trump. And then he has the audacity to write a book that we should all ascribe to his higher form of loyalty or fidelity or honor. I the media, they made a conscious decision in 2016 that the end justifies the means. And they really didn't care whether or not the Steele dossier was accurate or not. I was actually talking to Lindsay yesterday. I said, Lindsay, have you ever looked at the FBI efforts to corroborate the Steele dossier? And he said yes. But Devin sent me to do it. You know their number one piece of corroboration? It was a guy named Sidney Blumenthal and a newspaper article. The world's greatest law enforcement agency, in quotes, is using Sidney Blumenthal, a stooge for Hillary Clinton, and newspaper articles to verify the allegations of a guy named Christopher Steele, who they had already fired. I agree with you. Even if it's a not guilty verdict, look, it's hard to get a conviction, Brian. You got to get 12 people to agree beyond a reasonable doubt. Even if they say, you know what, we think he lied, you're not going to get a conviction. Even if they say we're pretty sure he lied, you're not going to get a conviction. Beyond a reasonable doubt. But to your point, you have if you have probable cause and you have a realistic possibility, then I think you can make the argument that you have an obligation to go forward.
Trey, who's going to be on your show this week?
I am going. Well, it's been shuffled now thanks to the indictment.
Yep.
I'm going to have the worst lawyer I know, Lindsey Graham. Come on. I'm going to have Dusty Johnson, whom I love, a congressman from South Dakota. We're going to cover the shutdown drama. We're going to cover crime. We're going to cover the shooting in ICE. Isn't it amazing, Brian, how fast news
it's amazing.
Changes?
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my goodness. I know.
3 days ago, we were talking about a targeted shooting in Dallas of an ICE agent, and now we're talking about Jim Comey. And you're a huge consumer of information, more so than I am. I'm watching us miss a bunch of putts in the Ryder Cup. But the notion that Jim Comey is somehow a martyr for justice. Do you remember when he was on his book tour? Now, he interviewed Brett, but he also admitted that he did something to Donald Trump and Mike Flynn that he never would have tried with Barack Obama. If you want to know what Jim Comey is like and the damage he did to our justice system, go watch that interview. Because the lady is blindfolded for a reason. And for him to admit that he treated Trump worse and differently than he would President Obama tells you all you need to know. And why, quite candidly, if he had to do it all over again, Donald Trump never would have retained Jim Comey.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't have replaced him with Andy McCabe, and he probably wouldn't have picked Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, real quick, and this is a final thought, Trey. If I found out that Donald Trump loses to if the next president is a Democrat, if Donald Trump spends in 2028, spends 4 months trying to undermine that Democrat, I'd be just as angry. I'm telling you, it's not the American way. You don't do that.
I don't think he will do it
never.
Because the CIA director and some others that I know in his administration would never allow it.
Exactly.
John Brennan and John Ratcliffe are as different as the East and West.
Trey, I can't wait for your show on Sunday at 9.
I'll try not to drop the ball at 10.
You got it. Trey Gowdy, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Now that Dan Comey has been indicted, who is the next person on your list in this retribution?
It's not a list, but I think there'll be others. I mean, they're corrupt. These were corrupt radical left Democrats, because Comey essentially was he's worse than a Democrat. I would say the Democrats are better than Comey. But no, there'll be others. Look, that's my opinion. They weaponized the Justice Department like nobody in history. What they've done is terrible. And so I hope there are others, because you can't let this happen to a country.
President of the United States, hey, Mr. President, who else is on your list? Bit of a trap question, but you're not going to trap this president. He goes, I don't have a list. There's a bunch of people that screwed up and are getting away with it. That was the president. He's now, I think he's at Bethpage by now, and he's going to be hanging out with the American team, but he likes a lot of the Europeans too. And here's the other thing, talk about difference. All the golfers like him. Don't forget, Sunday night at 10 o'clock, it's going to be One Nation. Amongst my guests, Sylvester Stallone and Kid Rock.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Welcome to the latest moments of my show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're about 8 blocks away from the United Nations. And as you know, over 150 world leaders have been here all week. An impactful Prime Minister Netanyahu gave a very moving speech, but every Arab nation seems to have left just as he got behind the podium. And I'm not sure. I thought the UN was the ability to debate and listen to each other. That was the main reason for the charter. If you leave, it seems to me you're not hearing anybody. But now we have the President of the United States just tell us, before we got on Marine One heading to the Ryder Cup, where I think he is right now, we could have a deal in Gaza. So we have that. But before we get to my two great guests, Congressman Jason Smith, who's a chairman of Ways and Means, and Jason Chaffetz, Fox News contributor and former outstanding congressman, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I think what we see in front of us, the challenges are finish Hamas in Gaza, keep their foot on Hezbollah. They've conducted over 1,000 attacks. They will not let them build capabilities in southern Lebanon again. That's never going to happen.
Israel's prime minister takes center stage. Why it's more important than ever we help the IDF finish off Hamas despite the allied defection.
Number two.
Radical left rhetoric. The radical left is causing the problem. They're out of control. They're saying things, and they're really dumb people.
Got to stop the political attacks on ICE, and certain Democrats are the ones inflaming the rhetoric as more deadly encounters take place, not with illegal immigrants, that's tough enough, but with organized protesters, and now the administration is taking aim in the money behind it.
Number one.
I woke up in the middle of the night on Monday night, because it didn't dawn on me originally, that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter.
That is James Comey, the former FBI director, indicted by a grand jury on two separate charges. It's about one page. Why I think even if he doesn't get convicted, it's a win for justice. Welcome, guys. All right. First off, on the Comey situation, the indictment came down last night. Chairman Smith, what do you think? I mean, a lot of people say the president is going after his enemies. Is that how you view it?
Not at all. I look at it from lying to Congress. It's illegal. There's been other people that's been charged with lying to Congress. Roger Stone was the last one. And so this shows that no one's above the law. If you recall back during the Biden administration, whenever we were doing the impeachment inquiry and met with Hunter Biden and the other Biden relatives, the lies that was said there, they ultimately got pardoned for. And so we've seen this time and time again. And whether you're the former FBI director or not, it shouldn't matter. You should be held accountable just like everyone else. Lying to Congress is a very big thing.
You're former chairman of oversight. You said at one point, if I knew then what I know now, you would have went after Comey. What did you not know when you were in Congress that you later were to find out?
Well, the degree in which the director was misleading and lying to Congress, I think it goes far beyond that. I think one of the things that still needs to come out of this is the FISA warrants. And I'm mystified as to why the courts have not come back. When you sign a FISA warrant, you're testifying before the court, and it says at the very top of it, as John Ratcliffe, then Congressman John Ratcliffe, now the CIA director, he said, if you look at the blank form, it says verified. So it's a one way. There's no advocate on the other side. They just, you go to the court and say, I verify this is true. Well, it was false. And it was the predicate in which they did all these other police powers. That is something we didn't understand in real time.
So, yeah, what I also wonder about is he wanted, not only did he come and testify, but he did a book tour, at which time he was getting questions about this, and yeah, new revelations are coming out about it. I mean, listen to Ted Cruz question him on May 3rd, cut six.
On May 3rd, 2017, in this committee, Chairman Grassley asked you point blank, quote, have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation? You responded under oath, quote, never. He then asked you, quote, have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton administration? You responded again under oath, no. Now, as you know, Mr. McCabe, who works for you, has publicly and repeatedly stated that he leaked information to the Wall Street Journal and that you were directly aware of it and that you directly authorized it. What Mr. McCabe is saying and what you testified to this committee cannot both be true. One or the other is false. Who's telling the truth?
I can only speak to my testimony. I stand by what the testimony you summarized that I gave in May of 2017.
So your testimony is you've never authorized anyone to leak. And Mr. McCabe, if he says contrary, is not telling the truth. Is that correct?
Again, I'm not going to characterize Andy's testimony, but mine is the same today.
Is that maddening to you, Jason?
It's so frustrating because it's crystal clear. If you lie to Congress, you're breaking the law.
And why were you lying? You're lying to undermine and make the collusion illusion real to the American people, the voter, to ultimately get this guy impeached, President Trump, before he's done.
Just be honest. That's the whole purpose of why you're called into Congress, is so for members of Congress can get to the bottom of things. And there's numerous examples that have been highlighted that Comey was asked various questions and people believe that they can be proved to be false.
So, and we'll see if
it'll... let me just add here. People would testify before Congress on a regular basis. Sometimes they have to, they come back a few days later and they correct their testimony and say, you know what, I misspoke. Or, hey, he never did that in this case. He was asked a very direct and great question by Senator Ted Cruz, and it was given every opportunity, and he never came back and corrected the record. That is his testimony, and the allegation is that that is a lie. And I think Ted Cruz did a very admirable job of laying that out.
And we can go back and forth and we'll see where this goes. He's got a lawyer up. This is why I say that it's out of the court. We don't know who the jury is going to be, but we know that he's a slippery guy. But I love the fact that he's got a lawyer up. He's going to have to get ready. His life is going to be put on hold because he, Brennan, Obama, Biden to a degree, Clapper. Lisa Monaco, Clapper, all these people hurt the country for 3 years. And they have this, it was amazing that Trump, even without the pandemic, was still going to win re-election despite this. And remember the eruptions and the distraction. Every time he did something positive, there'd be a revelation that would pop up on CNN, Congressman. I know you were just getting into Congress at the time, Jason.
That's exactly right. But you just look at the whole process. What President Trump went through, 70-plus indictments on felonies.
Yeah.
Like that is just absolutely crazy. And the American people saw right through it. He didn't lie before Congress. Trump never lied before Congress, and he got charged on 70 different unrelated matters. Comey lied to Congress.
Right. And I don't know if you've met Trump, but he doesn't forget. And he at one point is going to turn around when he sat there in those courtrooms, and he sat there and goes, well, you'll have your day. And he's doing it. I don't want him to do it on the country's time, but just go ahead, get justice, and see where it goes. I want to talk about what's happened with the economy. Nobody's talking about this. Our GDP grew at 3.6%. Now, that is an astounding number. I know why it's not getting such heat, because we have such a blizzard of news. But what does that mean? You're the Ways and Means Chair. What does that mean for our economy?
It has a huge impact. It has a huge impact to the revenues and the deficit spending. When we passed the One Big Beautiful Bill, creating the permanency in the tax code, the Congressional Budget Office, the official scorekeepers of Congress, projected that GDP would be at 1.8%. What was revised just in the last few days was 3.8%. That's 2 percentage points higher. That's roughly $600 billion of additional revenue a year. Not many people's talking about what happened in the month of June. The month of June this year, we had a $26 billion surplus in government. That's the first time that we had more revenues coming in than what we were spending in any month since June of 2016.
That's the tariffs.
It was because of the income coming in from the tax receipts and the tariffs. Those were the two items that contributed to it.
But yet we're looking at a shutdown in a few days. I don't see anything to stop it. Chuck Schumer got vilified for it, saying I had no option last time for continuing. So he and Hakeem Jeffries are putting up a tough front. You've been through this, Jason Chaffetz, as a congressman and chairman. Is that where we're heading now?
Well, it's up to the Democrats. This is the same spending level that they voted in favor of under Biden.
Yeah.
So what's their case? That they need more money for public radio? I mean, you're going to shut down the government over issues like that? They have no case. If they have one, go to the American people, do it. And they wouldn't meet for
Trump. Well, they want to undo a lot of the Big Beautiful Bill, right? Yeah, they want to undo it. What?
But it's the same spending level that they voted for under President Biden. It's that simple.
What are the ripple effects of this? Who gets paid? Who doesn't get paid? Who does get paid?
So whenever a government shuts down, you're looking at a quarter of government that's not funded, because that's the discretionary amount of spending. And then the administration can decide. There's a lot of flexibility. Yeah. And the worst thing for me to think that the Democrats would want to trust someone who they hate, which is President Trump, to decide what the spending priorities are for that quarter. Russ Volt with OMB will be making those decisions along with the president. What they're asking for is completely unrealistic. The Democrats voted for this clean continuation of funding 6 months ago. Chuck Schumer voted for this 6 months ago, but he's refusing to today unless we add $1.4 trillion in more spending. We provide health insurance for illegals. We eliminate $50 billion for rural hospitals, and let's continue an expanded COVID subsidy. This is what they're asking for. This is not what 77 million Americans voted for.
Right. And do you think the president was right not to meet with the leadership, Democratic leadership, Jason?
Yeah, he's not going there. It's just, yeah, I think that's right. Hey, wait till a couple days before. This is all on Chuck Schumer. It's totally up to the House. Did its job. They passed this. That it's up to the Senate. It's up to Chuck Schumer.
All right. When we come back, a few more minutes with these two gentlemen, Jason Smith and Jason Chaffetz. We're going to be talking about what Netanyahu just said and what the president just proclaimed. What's happening in Gaza, as well as the president's, I think, change of heart looking at the reality with Ukraine and Russia. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
It's looking like we have a deal on Gaza. And we'll let you know. I think it's a deal that will get the hostages back. It's going to be a deal that will end the war. It's going to be a deal which it's going to be peace. I think we have a deal. That'll be number 8, Peter. Not 10.
And he said that to Peter Ducey. Jason Chaffetz is here, Congressman Jason Smith, Chairman of Ways and Means. So, Chairman, not surprising, the president decides to tell the press that en route to Marine One, en route to the Ryder Cup. What do you think?
You know, the president is the most transparent president ever. We've ever had.
We're going to demand this from now on.
It is a great thing to have, that he just shoots out what he's thinking. He puts that on social media. He also does it to the world. And he's a deal maker. He has done 7 deals so far. He says this is number 8. And we welcome that.
Yeah, he wears it on his shirt sleeve, and I think he will get a deal.
Well, the deal has to be all that. These are the parameters. All the hostages got to come out. Hamas has got to be out, right? And right away. And then aid comes streaming in. And third is, it's all about Israel's security. If Israel listened to the world, Hezbollah wouldn't have been touched. Yeah. Syria would still be in place. The Houthis would never have been touched. And Iran would still be en route or have a nuclear weapon right now. They put up with the blizzard of criticism, then they do it. And right now, you walk through the Israeli protesters outside the UN, right? How big was that crowd?
Without a doubt. I walked down 6th Avenue, and seeing those protesters, I can tell you it's a well-funded, well-organized.
Why do you think that?
Without a doubt, it's based on research that we've done with tax-exempt entities that are funding these programs and these protests. We have, in fact, sent to Treasury a dozen different non-for-profits that have been funding terrorism, Hamas and terrorism. They should lose their tax-exempt status. Taxpayers should not be subsidizing those activities. You could tell with those nice signs, with how organized they are, it didn't just happen.
They're getting paid.
Yeah.
You don't show you're in your 20s, you show up and you're holding up some oak tag. But that's what Stephen Miller brought up yesterday and the president signed. He's going to start unwinding the George Soros' groups out there.
Well, they need unwinding him also means prosecuting him, because you not only look, you can protest, you know, can you pay somebody to put a sign up and down? But the problem is when they turn violent, and that's when you get into Antifa and some of these other organizations. I'm glad to see the president designate them as terrorist organizations, but you've got to go take down those networks. And it is a much bigger, broader problem. And I think if the funding was exposed. But then they've also got to prosecute some people.
And the
line is violence. If you want to have somebody paid protesters say, oh, I don't like Netanyahu. Hey, okay, you can do that. But can you advocate violence? You know, and everything from what was happening on the school campuses to Antifa to look at what's going on in Portland right now. I mean, it's still going on in mass.
And Chairman, I just want to get back to what you've been talking about and in terms of dollars and cents, we have a situation where the president has got tariffs out there now on pharmaceuticals and heavy machinery that came out yesterday. Have you guys been consulted on this in terms of all the tariffs that just went out? He's trying to bring manufacturing back, and this is kind of his heavy-handed way of doing it.
This is something that the president started an investigation back about 6 months ago under 232, of looking at the pharmaceutical industry, for one, and bringing those supply chains back to the United States. It is very alarming to know that our country is not secure when it comes to pharmaceuticals and medical supplies.
But nothing's happened. We know that since the pandemic ended, we didn't do anything about it.
And this is what the president's working towards to do it. And that's why he's setting these tariffs on, to help drive that manufacturing. Pharmaceuticals should be manufactured in the United States. There's no reason why it can't. It's such a high-tech process in the way that you move that forward. And this is a step of it, but this is part of the president's 232 and not IEPA.
What does that mean?
232 has been litigated in the prior administration, and the courts have found that he has the authority to. What you have being litigated right now at the Supreme Court is under IEPA. He did some of the tariffs.
All right, and finally, 30% approval rating for the Democratic Party, 38% for the Republican Party. We know tradition has it, the House flips, Jason Chaffetz. Do you feel as though it's very much in play, and this is Senate in play in your mind?
I mean, look.
Not partisanship, just your analysis.
Normally, it just flips in mass, but I don't see that happening at all, because you got people like Zohran Mamdani and AOC and others as the leader of the Democrat leaders of the Democratic Party. And what issue are they going to run on? Safety, security, the economy, everything Donald Trump's doing, what Jason Smith and the House have been doing. It's been going in the right direction. America knows that.
We got to get these trans athletes into women's locker rooms. That's their goal. Yes. I think they're going to run on that. Chairman Jason Chaffetz and Smith.
It's Will Tang Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Over time, many world leaders buckled. They buckled under the pressure of a biased media, radical Islamist constituencies, and anti-Semitic mobs. There's a familiar saying, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Well, for many countries here, when the going got tough, you caved. And here's the shameful result of that collapse. For much of the past 2 years, Israel has had to fight a seven-front war against barbarism with many of your nations opposing us. Astoundedly, as we fight the terrorists who murdered many of your citizens, you are fighting us.
The Prime Minister Netanyahu, I'm firmly behind and always have been, and I'm just amazed that we have thousands of people in New York. I shouldn't be saying amazed. I'm just going to tell you, there's thousands of people in New York outside the UN chanting for the Palestinians who have walked away from every opportunity to have a two-state solution. They don't want one. And then you had all these Arab nations walk out as the prime minister went behind the podium to give a speech. Tommy Lahren's here, co-host of the Big Weekend Show, 5 to 8 Saturday and Sunday. And for a host of Outkick, Tommy Lahren is fearless. Tommy, you watched the whole speech, right?
I did.
You saw the big uproar as the delegations walked out.
Yeah, to be expected.
Right.
Whatever, let them lead. They're cowards in many ways. The Netanyahu speech was fantastic, as they always are. I think he's an excellent speaker. Yes. I think he conveys things both eloquently, but he also gets to the point. When he held up that board with the multiple choice, the pop quiz, I thought that was genius. And to the clip that you just played saying, we're fighting all these wars, sometimes on behalf of your own citizens, and you're fighting us.
I know.
And I think that was incredibly powerful.
And you remember when he brings up also, he's like, you're talking about a two-state solution, a Palestinian state. You know who doesn't want one? The Palestinians. Have you asked them? They've had five separate opportunities to have one, beginning in 1945. They have war in 1948. And ever since then, they had Oslo in 93. You know, Tommy, who sounds as determined as Netanyahu or frustrated? When you talk to Bill Clinton. Because he kind of spent like 3 years of his presidency working at the nuances of a deal, including a tunnel that would connect the West Bank and or a bridge to Gaza. And this is what they're going to be. And we're going to have a piece of Jerusalem. And then he gasped for Africa, goes, yeah, not doing it. Sorry. And that's why even Hillary Clinton will bring up, don't include me in this Palestinians have a case theory, because they've walked away from all of it.
Right. Well, I thought it was also powerful when he said they don't want a Palestinian state. They want to eliminate the Jewish state. That is the goal.
Yeah.
And he also brought up, and I think for these protesters that are outside, I think a lot of them are just morons, some well-meaning, some not, who think that this is their new cause. I mean, they go from one cause to another.
It's Antifa,
BLM. Yeah, to some extent. But I also think that a lot of them are influenced by TikTok. And you see a lot of folks on social media that are very pro-Palestine. They don't really know what it means. They're not necessarily about all human rights. This is the issue that they've chosen because it's the in vogue thing to do. But these protesters out there, when Netanyahu spoke to, if you ask the Palestinians, how many of them celebrated October 7th, that it's overwhelming.
90%.
So reminding people that, yes, we want to protect civilians. Yes, we don't want death and despair and starvation. But keep in mind, a lot of these people, whether they've been indoctrinated from age one up or not, they want Jews and Americans dead. Just remember what we have to contend with. All these people that are protesting, they refuse to acknowledge it, or maybe they don't care.
So General Jack Keane said, I went over to Israel, he just got back. He said, Donald Trump is the most popular political figure anywhere in that country, wherever you go, as soon as they know you're an American. And that wasn't the case with Barack Obama. It certainly wasn't the case with Joe Biden. I even think Bush 41 didn't have great relationships with Russia. Reagan had a great one, and Bush 43 had a great one with Israel. Always an ally. So Having said that, the President of the United States had this to say as he was outside Marine One before he got up, before he headed to the Ryder Cup.
It's looking like we have a deal on Gaza. And we'll let you know. I think it's a deal that will get the hostages back. It's going to be a deal that will end the war. It's going to be a deal which it's going to be peace. I think we have a deal. That'll be number 8, Peter, not 10.
Side note, yeah. You might have a deal on Gaza. It has to be all the hostages.
Right.
I mean, am I right? I mean, there's no deal that could happen without
right.
that.
Right. Well, also, I think that, again, I'm surprised there weren't really many follow-ups to that question, by the way, because I thought that was a pretty big one to drop, and then they moved on to other things. I thought that was kind of the big one of the morning there. But I think, again, hostages. But also, if Hamas is still controlling that region, if Hamas is still controlling Gaza, I'm kind of with Israel on this one. Oh, we're going to trust you this time? Oh, this time? I mean, is it, as Netanyahu said, is that a joke?
Right. Of course not. So let's talk about the Comey thing, because I know we have one long segment, then you have Outnumbered, right?
Yes.
And then are you going to be on One Nation? Is that rumor confirmed?
Yes, it is.
Do you know who you're going to be joined by?
I'm pretty sure it's going to be you.
And Sylvester Stallone, Kid Rock, Stephen Miller, Jim Jordan.
All right, so I'm the only lady on the show that night.
I think that's one of your demands.
That's what I wanted, and that's what I got.
You're going to do the media moments that matter, and yes. Of course, you're going to be on for 6 hours over the weekend. So James, I'm not exaggerating, from 5 to 8 Eastern time. So James Comey got indicted yesterday, and your thoughts about the chances of this being successful, because the Democrats are beside themselves. Here's Jamie Raskin, cut 9.
Well, it's obviously an outrage. It's a scandal. And it does feel like a major lurch into further lawlessness in the country. But all of this bespeaks an incredible politicization of the Department of Justice and its conversion into an instrument of the political will of the president.
So he's not for it.
Listen, when I hear these Democrats talk about political weaponization as if we all didn't live through, 10 years of that very thing? That's laughable. Please spare me. They should all be very quiet. The American people are not dumb. We have a mugshot of President Trump to prove what you have done, okay? Mm-hmm. But I will also say this. I hope it sticks. Because if it doesn't, I think, again, similar to all the investigations that went on into Biden family influence peddling and all that, which I thought were noble endeavors but didn't amount to anything, I think that if you're going to go to this length, it's got to stick. Otherwise, it feels like a dog and pony show, which I don't like.
Tell me what you think of my theory, and it sounds like it's going to be, I'm not for it, Brian, which won't hurt our relationship at all. I believe that by bringing this out, by making him lawyer up, by making him go ahead and try to get a story together, which he clearly lied about, if you get us to that point where the whole country's got to say, why the hell is he on trial again? And when they realize with any good lawyer how many times he's lied on his book tour, like an idiot, he does a book tour answering questions. He got real questions from Brett Baer, and then the Ted Cruz, the Susan Collins, the Lindsey Graham questions. He just looks terrible. So my thing is, by bringing it forward, if the case is tried adequately, if they have a fair jury, and if he has a way to walk, it'll still underline the corruption that took place. You don't feel like that. You don't feel like the bringing the case forward, if presented, is enough.
My thing is, to those who are paying attention, we already know, right? My mind space is always to go to convincing the other side, right? Because everything is hearts and minds when it's political. So if he walks, will the other side pay attention to all the lies? Will they pay attention to all of the finer points of it? I'm not sure. I would hope so, but I'm not entirely sure that that's going to be the case. I hope something sticks. I hope we get some transparency. If we get transparency out of this with him and many others, it will be a victory.
So I want you to hear Senator Lindsey Graham last night, because in the beginning, I remember, he goes, Brian, I don't know what's going on at Rushgate. I never saw Trump with anyone with Russia, but we have to find out what happened. And then we find out that he submits that leaked information to his Columbia professor friend, puts the editorial in the New York Times, and then they launch a special counsel featuring Robert Mueller. Cut 13.
He said he knew there would be a cause standing up to Trump. Everybody who stands up to Trump gets cheered on as a hero. Every accusation against Trump that's bad for him is assumed to be true. The question is there any cost to people trying to destroy President Trump's presidency, his personal life? Is there any cost in this country for lying to a court to push a warrant that you know is really not accurate? So here's the question. Everybody answered my question who signed the warrant application. If you knew then what you know now, would you sign the warrant application? They all said no. Now, why did they say no? Because me and you and a bunch of other people proved it to be just complete BS. It was not a reliable dossier. It was hearsay. It was bar talk. It was made up garbage by people associated with the Clinton campaign.
And he's going to be forced to ask that question.
Right, which I think is good. Let's get some transparency. That's what I hope. I hope that something lands with it. I just hate giving fodder to the other side to distract from everything that great that this president is doing, the awful things I believe the Democrat Party and the left are doing. I hate to give them this giant distraction so they can sit there and cry and moan and whine. That just annoys me to my core, I guess, and I'd rather them have to address the real issues in their party. This gives them an out for that, which for me, from a media perspective, just annoys me.
I understand, too. You know one of the big stories yesterday that no one's talking about? Our GDP at 3.8%. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's like that is China big. I mean, that's growth that nobody projected, but it was overwhelmed by the Comey indictment, the Gaza situation, everything else that's going on and swirling around the Ukraine, the UN. So I'm not saying that's bad, but if the economy gets on track, which it could, I remember there with President Bush when Iraq was going bad, you know what was going great? Our economy. And nobody was talking about it because everyone's like, what the hell is going on in Iraq? So if the economy gets on track, they could bring a close to these two conflicts, Ukraine and Gaza. This might be a heck of an election in the midterms. And I think by the time this gets on deck, it might be even to the next, it might be a year before we see this guy on trial.
Right. Well, I hope so. And I hope that there is no distraction. I hope that the left and the leftist media finally has to confront the victories of this administration.
Tommy Lahren, the question is, you're in the prime of your life. You're in excellent shape. Could you get down to the set of Outnumbered in 13 minutes?
Yeah, I think I can manage that.
And
way.
Will you still stick around for Sunday at 10 o'clock?
Absolutely. I'll be here all weekend, Brian.
You know, I just committed Tommy Lahren. Tommy, thanks so much. We'll watch you from 5 to 8 in the big weekend show, Saturday and Sunday. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Everyone wanted to make it in America. It's the land of opportunity. And I still believe it's the greatest country in the world. And if you come here and you work hard and you dedicate yourself, you can be or do whatever you want. I am unbelievably grateful and lucky that I got to come to America early on. And I think success is celebrated here. I think there's a wonderful sense of work ethic. I live here. My wife is American. My daughter is American. You know, I have a lot of affinity towards this country. And I think everyone that lives here should have that same affinity because it is a wonderful place.
Yeah, I think it's pretty great. That is maybe the best golfer in the world, Rory McIlroy, obviously from Ireland. Or Scotland, but lives here, as he just said. But I just love that attitude of he understands what the rest of the world is like and said, I love this place. And I love to be here. But you're playing for Europe. But if you really love the place, you could tank. I'm pretty sure he won't do that. So the president of the United States is probably on the course now at Bethpage. He landed with the Nassau County, Brad Blakeman, the Nassau County executive, and he met him in Farmingdale at a private airport. And I think that is about a 15-minute drive if you're with the president and you'll be on the golf course where Bryson DeChambeau will – the president said, I like to follow him around. They're good friends. Bryson's got his own – he's very good communicator, by the way. I went out and did an event of his at Live at Doral. I could not believe how impressive and how well-read he was. But he had President Trump on his podcast, and they've bonded since then. Plus, Trump doesn't care how old you are. He really doesn't. You're his age, that's fine. You're 23, if you're good, like you're 27, you're Caroline Leavitt, you'll have a key position and meet with me every day. I don't care. So with Bryson DeChambeau, he feels like they're friends. Rory McIlroy says he's such an advocate and so positive for golf. The other thing that I thought that Bryson DeChambeau said, he said, no, excuse me, Scotty Scheffler said yesterday, he said he treats the waiters, the guy who cleans the carts and the balls and the clubs, the same way he treats the top golfers. And he just is a positive force around the game. So listen to what Bryson said yesterday about the president.
I hope he'll inspire us to victory. you know, I think he'll be a great force for us to get a lot of people on our side. And I think it'll be interesting and exciting to see how the crowd and everybody reacts. It's going to be an electric environment.
And here's Scotty Scheffler from yesterday.
The president's kind of funny. He loves the game of golf. He loves supporting golfers. And I get a call or a text from him sometimes after wins. And he just loves the game of golf. And he's one of those guys, when you're around him, you know, he does such a good job of almost like feeding confidence into everybody around him. That was one of the things I noticed a lot with the little bit of time I spent him is he treats everybody the same and treats people with the utmost respect. And whether you're the person serving us lunch or the caddy on the golf course or the guy who's the president of the club that we're at, he treats everybody like they're the greatest person in the world. And I don't think he has any plans to address us as a team, but I'm sure if things go well, we'll hear from him.
Are you able to give us any insight into what he says when he calls you?
Great job.
So the results yesterday, Scheffler lost with Henley against Fitzpatrick and Aberg. And then Thomas and DeChambeau lost yesterday 4-3 to Hatton and Rahm. Man, we're fantastic golfers. So they're all going to be out there, and that's why I'll tell you, on Long Island, I know you're listening around the country, this place is electric with the Ryder Cup more than the U.S. Open. The U.S. Open's also going to be on Long Island, Shinnecock in 2026. It's already being advertised, and that'll be great, but there's just one winner. Now you got a country that could win the U.S., and now you have Europe that could win with a lot of golfers that people truly love. So it's a bit of a break. I do want to cover this before we go. There was a poll done by Emerson. I don't love the Emerson polls, but it just shows a trend. That's how I look at it. For the governor's race in New Jersey, remember how the president closed the gap during the last election in 2024? Well, Jack Cittarelli, during 2022, he lost by 2 percentage points 4 years ago to Senator Murphy, who's got a 32% approval rating now. He's just awful in New Jersey. Now, you go, and Mikey Sherrill is the Democrat running, and every Democrat has an advantage, but she is so star-crossed, and she is so flawed as a candidate. Jack Cittarelli is so strong and experienced, it's now a flat-footed tie at 43-43. And now we get this story that Mikey Sherrill, one of the great things is she's got this military background. When she graduates the academy, true, but she never walked. Why? She was involved in the cheating scandal. We don't know how. Listen to, now it's being reported that the records are sealed. She says, because I wouldn't rat on my friends. Listen to Cittarelli after this. He wants to get to the bottom of this, too. Cut 46.
She's trying like hell to obfuscate, Sean, but there's no obfuscating what we now know. She was not allowed to walk. And you asked the simple question, why wasn't she allowed to walk? She can clear this all up by approving the release of her disciplinary records, but she won't, which begs more questions than it answers. Listen, she disqualified herself last week with that debate performance. Today is another disqualifier with this revelation.
All right, here's more, Cup 47. Actually, we don't have time. But I will say this. We could always play it and cut out of it. But Jack Cittarelli did this. He also had a question for him. How is it that you now have made $7 to $11 million on stocks since you got into Congress? And she goes, is that true? I don't know. Do you know anybody that made $7 million and doesn't know if it's true? See you on One Nation, Sunday night at 10 o'clock. Amongst my guests, Jim Jordan, Stephen Miller, Sylvester Stallone, and Kid Rock, and Tommy Lahren.